the author of Philly Special, the inside story of how the Philadelphia Eagles won their first and likely only for this year Super Bowl championship. That will be Sal Palantonio. Good morning, Sal.
Good morning, Pat. Good morning, Joe. Hope you guys had a nice Thanksgiving.
Same to you, Sal. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And I trust everything went well in the Sal Pal household, even though you probably probably did a little too much Italian with the dinner. But I assume things went well.
Yeah, well, I got a vowel on the end of my name, so I got no choice. And it was actually pretty darn good, too. You know, you got to have a little ravioli or lasagna before the turkey.
All right. Fair enough. Listen, I want to start, Sal. We're going to start without we'll get back to the home team here, but I want to start because you were on the sidelines for what social media and a lot of sports people have been saying was the game of the millennium, Monday night. And so my question to you is, given the reaction to it and how the league has obviously focused on and liberalized the passing rules, is this just now, does this cement in the league's eyes that what we're doing here is the right thing? This kind of passing game is here to stay.
Well, Pat, you know, the tagline that I used on SportsCenter on Tuesday morning in the wee hours was, that was not football, that was the future of football.
Right.
In Los Angeles, Sal Palantonio, ESPN.
Okay.
And I meant it.
Right.
That was the future of football, for better or worse. This is here. It's here right now. And you know, it goes back to a comment that you made, I think it was last week or the week before, Pat, where you said defense is almost irrelevant in the NFL. It is almost irrelevant. Now, notwithstanding that there were some really primo defensive plays in that game, but for the most part, if you wanted to score, you could score. If you wanted to throw the ball down the field, you could throw the ball down the field with a little help from your friends in the zebra outfits. Because there were a lot of penalties called downfield. You know, Gene Steratore is now in the CBS booth with Tony Romo and Jim Nance. He now does what Mike Pereira does. Gene Steratore's brother is Tony Steratore. They're both from Pittsburgh, and they both fancy themselves as the ultimate, you know, gatekeepers of the game. Tony Steratore called 8 penalties on his own Monday night. 8. That's a whole game's worth for some teams. Teams that lead the league in penalties. It was just totally out of control, Pat. I thought, you know, the decision to go to an all-star referee crew was a bad decision. You know, all those referees were trying to prove just how smart they were and how good they were, and they wound up calling so many penalties, especially in the first quarter. And that totally opened up the game, completely liberalized it, and you had a track meet. You had definitely a track meet as a result.
Sal, that was exactly what I was going to ask you about. And then the other half of that is that, like, what kind of message does it send to the rest of the games for the weekend if the all-star crew is being called playoff stuff for this game in particular? I mean, that kind of sends a message that, hey, this is the game that's important. Good luck to all of you other games and all of you other crews.
Yeah, it really was the bad message to send, Joe. You're absolutely right.
So, Sal, when you...
I thought it was a bad idea, and it proved to be a bad idea because the number of penalties called was out of control. Even Andy Reid, who never complains about the referees, sort of gave a half-hearted endorsement of the whole concept.
Now, Sal, one of the things we were talking about with this being the future, and as you said, it's the future of football, we're starting to see not just the long pass interferences, but also with teams being afraid to hit near the sidelines. We're seeing guys go up the sidelines. We saw it on Thanksgiving a couple times on big plays. When you look at it, is there another logical step, or is this what we're going to see moving forward, or is there still another evolution in this thing that's on the horizon?
You know, I think the most important thing to remember is player safety is tantamount. Okay, I understand that. We get it. It's what the players want. It's what the league wants. It's what the NFL Players Association wants. But if you change the essence of the game, what are you sacrificing? And I don't think that the NFL has approached asking that question yet. I don't think they have, Joe.
Yep. It's an interesting, yeah, I don't know. It's an interesting take.
Yeah.
How that's going to go. But, Sal, I wanted to ask you to, the other concept that I wanted to discuss with you today is that of momentum. Now, you have said on the show in the past, momentum, use the old baseball analogy. It's the next day's starting pitcher, right? But I'm talking now in terms of your Philadelphia Eagles and the fact that 2 weeks ago, that much heralded Sunday night game, this is it, we're going to knock Dallas out, and they don't even show up. Last Sunday, they get literally steamrolled by an admittedly very good New Orleans Saints team. So I'm framing the question like this. And again, during the week, we have more backbiting in the media between team leaders talking about lack of this, lack of that. Can all of that be forgotten and all when the ball is kicked off at 1 o'clock tomorrow?
Well, I often use that analogy about baseball that it's the next day starting pitcher that will, you know, ease the momentum or create the momentum or stop the slide, whatever it is. That's why they call them stoppers. And it's about defense. You really can't do it with offense at the pro football level. At the pro football level, Pat, a defense is the next day's starting pitcher. In other words, a defense can stop the slide. And in this particular case, with this particular team, I don't see that happening. I don't think they have enough bodies, healthy bodies. I don't see it happening. Not the way they're playing defense. They get Tim Jernigan back, but they lose their entire secondary and their middle linebacker. I think there's too much passivity in the way the defense is being called by Jim Schwartz. Jim Schwartz better figure out what he's going to do, or he's not going to be coaching the defense next year. I'd be shocked if they bring him back.
Sal, on the other coordinator side, there's been some kind of consternation in Philadelphia about Mike Groh's comments about the difficulty in integrating Golden Tate into the offense. When you heard that or when you read that, what did you make of it?
I thought he was out of line. It's not up to Mike Groh to talk about the offense. Jim Schwartz can talk about the defense because he owns the defense. It's Doug Peterson's offense. And, you know, it's Doug Peterson's team, but it's also Doug Peterson's offense. And I thought that Mike Groh saying that, you know, it was really up to Doug Peterson to say something like that, not a first-year offensive coordinator. I was kind of surprised because I know Mike. Terrific young, learning on the front. And it's been difficult. Really tough. Last year, there was a triumvirate. It was a three-pronged attack. DeFilippo, Reich, and Peterson. And those are three really sharp minds. And Mike Groh was brought in over Deuce Daly to be the helpful eyes and ears to Doug Peterson. He doesn't need to be undermining the process by speaking out like that.
So I thought that's an interesting take. Defense is the next day starting pitcher. You look at this Eagle defense right now, and you see still stuck on 7 turnovers forced, which is unbelievable. Like tied for 28th in the league. They are 16th in the league in sacks. It's just been the offense, the emphasis everywhere in the league is on offense, including here in Philadelphia. It is kind of a little bit under the radar that, you know, there's a game tomorrow now where the defense must get to Eli because he doesn't want to get sacked. He's old, and he doesn't want to get hurt. He doesn't want to get hit. And I think that is an absolute key to them tomorrow is they've got to get to him or else that secondary will be thoroughly exposed.
Well, the problem is this. You know, it's a league-wide difficulty because sacks are down, blitzing is down, and sacks are down. And the reason why, and Doug Peterson and I have talked about this, and I think I mentioned this on your program 2 weeks ago, Pat, with blitzing down and sacks down, the reason is simple. The ball is coming out too quickly. So it makes no sense to dedicate bodies to blitzing when you could be dedicating bodies to coverage because the ball comes out so quickly. And I get that. I understand that. But there is a time when you can blitz effectively. And, you know, we saw Mike Vrabel's defense blitz Tom Brady very effectively when Patriots lost in Tennessee. And Brady's among the best and quickest at getting the ball out. So it's all about deception and timing when you're blitzing a quarterback in the current NFL, because the spread offenses and the ball comes out so quickly. And if you're not duping or deceiving the quarterback, and you're not getting home when you do blitz, then you're in trouble. And the Eagles are in trouble because of that.
Well, and Sal, that kind of brings us to tomorrow's opponent, because there was a whole lot of consternation, to use that word again, between Eli Manning and Pat Shurmur early on about Eli Manning wanting to hold the football a beat longer and Pat Shurmur pushing him to get it out faster and faster and faster. And as Eli's adopted that, the offensive results have been better for New York. Is that something that's kind of a nightmare matchup now when you consider Odell Beckham Jr. and Sterling Shepard and also Saquon Barkley? Are the Eagles really behind the eight ball here facing this offense?
I think it's a nightmare matchup for sure. If they don't get to Eli, it definitely will be. But don't forget, they also have Saquon Barkley. And it's pretty interesting because up in New York this week, 2 weeks ago, prior to the Giants' last win, you know, Pat Shurmur and Eli Manning in film sessions with Saquon Barkley both showed the rookie out of Penn State that he wasn't hitting the cold with enough quickness and ferocity, and that the holes were there, but he needed to get there. And, you know, we used to have Merrill Hodge all the time talk about this on the matchup show. You got to press the hole and press the double team as quickly as possible. Get to that seam because it's going to close very quickly, not college. In the NFL, these guys are so fast and so strong that they will close it up faster than you can get there unless you press the issue very quickly. And Barkley did that last week and had lots of success. So not only have they been preaching to Eli to get the ball out quickly, they've been preaching Barkley to get to the hole quickly and get there violently. And it's really working for him. So this is a really difficult matchup for the Eagles defense. There's no question about that. You know, the formula for their victories last year was get an early lead and then rush the passer, the old Bill Walsh formula. Well, they're not getting the early lead. They've only scored 14 points in the first quarter
all year long.
Last year, they scored 78 in the first quarter going into week 11.
Yeah.
So that's the formula is gone, Joe and Pat. And so they need to figure out, all right, how – and the Giants' defense, there's nothing there. I mean, they scored on the Giants' defense in the first quarter when they went to the Meadowlands.
Right.
So this is a game, really, we're talking a lot about the defense. This is a game where the offense, which is healthy, needs to take control early, press the issue, score early. Every time they have the ball, it should be a drive for a touchdown.
All right.
I'm serious. Right. Every single time. There really isn't anything that scares you on that Giants defense.
Right.
This is up to Carson Wentz and Doug Peterson and, you know, listen, Golden Tate. They gave up a third-round pick for Golden Tate. Has the guy scored yet? I don't think he's scored yet. Has he scored?
No.
He has not.
No. Not in Philadelphia, no. No.
No.
Nope. So, Sal, let me get talking here with Sal Powell, the author of Philly Special, the story of how the Philadelphia Eagles won their first Super Bowl, and the host of the NFL matchup show presented by First Bank. Sal, let's look back to tomorrow. Yesterday. And I wanted to get your take on this. I was talking with Joe earlier in the show about it. Alex Smith's injury prevented us probably from seeing the three most disappointing quarterbacks of the 2000s. And I wanted your take on Matthew Stafford and Matt Ryan. Would you not agree that these two quarterbacks have the most unrealized potential of any quarterbacks drafted in the league the last couple of decades?
Yeah, I really feel sorry for Matt Ryan. He's on the doorstep of winning his first Super Bowl, and his coaches and that defense in Atlanta just conspired to allow the Patriots to come back like in that game. And they take that Super Bowl victory away from Matt Ryan. So that was tough for him.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Matt Ryan's put up some great numbers, and he's had a lot of wins, and he was in the Super Bowl. Matthew Stafford has made a whole lot of money and done a whole lot of nothing. And to throw two interceptions at home on Thanksgiving Day and lose to Chase Daniel, unforgivable, right? Unforgivable. I would say Matt Patricia, who inherited Matthew Stafford, has got to be thinking to himself, all right, well, listen, if I'm going to do anything here, I got to fix this quarterback problem. We're invested $100 million in this guy. And, you know, Aaron Rodgers is playing on one leg. He's been sacked 30 times this year. Kirk Cousins has the second most pass attempts in the league and the third fewest rushing attempts of any team in the league. And we can't beat Minnesota or Green Bay. And Chicago comes in here on Thanksgiving on a short week. It's so, so, so hard. Congratulations to the Bears for doing that. Quick turnaround, go on the road on Thanksgiving Day with a backup quarterback and beat the Lions. That was a tremendous defensive performance and a gutsy performance by Chase Daniel. But you're right, Pat. I would say if you're going to pick on one guy, it'd have to be Matthew Stafford more than Ryan. But you're absolutely right about both those guys having unrealized potential for sure.
Yeah. That's the truth. And boy, the Lions just mired in complete mediocrity in Detroit. Good luck to Matt Patricia. But I want to do the top five now, Sal. We'll stay in the NFC because it was all NFC games yesterday. Presented by our good buddy Pat McConney from Annie Mac Home Mortgage. He's a licensed loan originator in PA in New Jersey. So if you're thinking about buying a home, refinancing your existing mortgage, give Pat a call so he can hold your hand throughout the whole process. You can reach him at 267-474-6379. That's 267-474-6379. Annie Mac is an equal housing lender. NMLS number 338923. Sal, what we want to do here is just the top five NFC contenders going into tomorrow. So, I mean, after that Monday night game, I still wouldn't rank the Rams ahead of the Saints. Saints beat them. So there you go. Saints 1, Rams 2. I got the Bears 3. Joe and I were talking earlier, Sal. They can run it, and they can, well, they don't run that well, but they can play defense. So I got the Saints 3. I got Dallas 4 for that same reason. And I got the Packers 5 because I think they still have a puncher's chance. Sal?
Yeah, you know, the NFC went from being really strong to very top heavy.
Right.
You know, so I got Saints, Rams 1 and 2. And then 3, 4, and 5 is a total toss up, in my view. If the Saints and Rams were not in the NFC Championship game, then something went really, really violently wrong. Something went really wrong. Those two teams are much better than the rest of the conference. I would have to say number 3 would have to be the Bears.
Right.
Because of one player. Where have we ever had a situation where one guy was traded from one conference to the next and immediately turned that team, I'm talking about Khalil Mack, immediately turned that team into a contender for the conference championship? And, you know, they really are a contender. If you have to, especially if you have to go to Chicago, let's say Chicago gets one home game, right? They get a bye in a home game. Wow.
Yeah.
It could be in the NFC Championship game, real easy.
Correct.
I mean, not with Chase Daniel. Mitchell Trubisky will have to come back.
Right.
But the Bears are absolutely number 3. I like Seattle number 4. Mm. I just do.
Mm-hmm.
Seattle can run the ball, and they're playing defense. And for all the new NFL, I think Seattle with that formula can do some damage. Now, obviously, they got a win on the road in Carolina, and historically they've always done well in Carolina, especially late in the season, and I expect them to win rather easily. So I'm going to go with Seattle number 4, and then I'm going to go with the Eagles number 5 because I can't say the Dallas Cowboys.
Well, Sal's logic holds up because I had the same 5, except I wasn't able to make that exception at the very end.
Right.
Unfortunately, you got to put Dallas somewhere. So there they are.
About that. Cowboys can run it and they can defend it, and you can't ignore it. You know, that's two pretty important factors come December.
But how hot's Seattle going to be if they end up making the playoffs? I mean, that's a team that nobody's going to want to play,
right?
Really. I mean, that's a crazy talented team.
They're running
too.
The ball well, too. All right, Sal, I hope the book's going well for Christmas season. Hopefully sales are going to spike on you, and congratulations on that, and of course on the matchup show, and we look forward to talking to you next week, after a win.
Hey, listen, Pat, Joe, the playoffs start tomorrow for the Eagles and the Giants. This is going to be a game where every ounce of blood, sweat, and tears will be left on the field. This is one of those late season NFC East matchups that you do not want to miss. This will be a 3-point game, and it's going to be a great game. I'm really, really looking forward to tomorrow's game. Okay. Really looking forward to it.